Today's format's going to be very interactive. So I'm here to serve you, I'm here to answer your questions, and I'm here to learn from you as well. So as much as I may have learned from 5,000 letters that people have sent me, you are the actual woman, not me, behold, not actual woman. You, whatever experience you have had is valid. Whatever experience you have had is true. So I'm very interested in hearing what that is. So feel free to give me feedback, feel free to ask questions. In the meantime, I have a whole bunch of information to convey to you, so let's begin. I want you to imagine that it's a soft summer evening in New York. And this is a few years ago when I met up with some college friends of mine. Let's call them Holly and Ariella. And if you've read my book, this is the story that shows up in the introduction. And I'm going to elaborate on that a little bit, a little more detail that's not actually in the book. So what happened was we went to an art gallery together. Great time. And afterwards, we're like, hey, let's hang out and talk some more. So we went to this outdoor cafe, sat down, we're having food. And as we're sitting there, my friend Holly's phone keeps on ringing, texts keep on coming in, and I'm thinking, that's probably the significant other or something, right? And, didn't worry about that until the other friend, Ariella, is like, hey, why don't you ask Holly about her boyfriend? I'm like, okay, tell me about your boyfriend. So, oh, my boyfriend, he's so great. He's this, Austrian artist. He's a bit of a starving artist type, so, he lives with me and I pay for a lot of his stuff. But it's cool because I'm so in love with him. The sex is so great. He's so handsome and so sexy, blah, blah, blah. In the meantime, bzz, 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 phone is buzzing. I'm like, okay, that's interesting. And then Holly's like, why don't you ask him about that time when her daughter fell down the stairs? I'm like, well, Holly, tell me about that time your daughter fell down the stairs. I said, yeah, a few months ago, my daughter fell down the stairs. She split her head open. There's blood everywhere. I'm distraught. I don't know what to do. I pick her up to go to the hospital. On the way, I call Klaus, and I say, Klaus, I need you. And he says, oh, I'm sorry. I'm afraid of blood. I'm like, what? Wait. Let me get this straight. So he lives with you. You pay for his broke ass. And that one time when he could have made himself useful, he didn't even show up because he's afraid of blood. We've got a problem here. So I kind of laid into her saying, no, this is not good. And then I'm like, is that Klaus, like, being all possessive and saying, where are you? Why aren't you coming home? She's like, well, yes, it is. And the phone keeps on ringing. I'm like, this is ridiculous. I mean, here's a woman. She went to Harvard, so she's smart. She's educated. Great family. Nobody's ever raised a hand on her. She's no history of abuse, nothing. Makes great money. She's a successful artist, well-known. Everything's lined up. So I'm thinking, why on earth is she messing with this guy? And to give you the end of the story, I knew that just telling her to get rid of this guy would not be enough, because it never has been. What I said to her that actually got to her was, look, you have two kids now. One of them's your daughter, one of them's your son, and they're watching you. They're watching you with this guy. They're watching you compromise yourself. They're watching you not be the best version of you, right? And you're putting up with all this nonsense, and they're learning. And someday, they're going to end up with some person who also abuses them and is possessive and doesn't show up when they're needed. And it's going to be kind of your fault because they learned it from you. And she's like, whoa, okay, that's interesting. So I just kind of left it at that because usually my words only go so far. But a crazy thing happens. 10 days later, I get an email. And it says, hey, Allie, thank you so much for the pep talk. I just want to let you know that the trucks came in and took all Klaus's stuff and he moved out yesterday. And I just want to ask you a favor. Please don't tell my parents ever about this. For the past 18 months that we've been dating, he was also beating me up. And I'm like, oh my God. So I'm like, okay. So in case you're curious, that was the thing that got me to actually finish writing this book. I'd been sitting on it for 3 years. And finally, I'm like, okay, I have a reason. Because if I can get even one person, one woman out there, to snap out of whatever situation she's in and realize, oh, wow, this is not okay. I must do something about it. Then it'll be a worthwhile endeavor. So I tell you that whole story to illustrate, first of all, that somebody who's perfectly otherwise healthy, great background, healthy, just everything is lined up, has money, right? She's not stuck in a relationship because he's the provider. She's the provider. It can still happen. So I'm going to use a framework of that terrible relationship to talk about what's a guy in your life anyway? What's it good for? Why do you want a guy, right? Why do people pair up at all? And I want to go back to deep evolution, because this whole life that you live in with a few million people in a city and swipey apps where you can evaluate hundreds of potential mates, this is really recent, right? Your brain, on the other hand, is not recent. Your brain has been undergoing evolution for 3 million years. So it's tuned to certain things, and the environment has changed radically, but you're still tuned to those certain things. So what are you tuned to, and how can those be hijacked to your detriment, and what can we do to make sure that it actually works to your benefit? Okay, so here's my 4 P's of what a guy is good for. Number one, protector. Okay, so throughout evolution, there were real threats out on the savanna, out in the jungle. Saber-toothed cat, neighboring tribes. So a guy who's strong and knows how to wield a spear was actually important for your survival. If you did not have that around, your genes may not make it to the next generation. So protection. Number two is provisions. Okay, so turns out that women actually gathered most of the calories then, but the guy also went out and hunted. And as a woman, guess what happens every month? You lose hemoglobin. You need meat. And without meat, you become anemic. You don't have enough iron for your blood cells to manufacture themselves, and you perish. That's not a good way for you to perpetuate your genes to the next generation. So you need a guy to provide things, okay? Then it was meat. Now the analog of that is money or something, right? Putting bread on the table. Okay. Where was I? Why am I not finding my 4 B's? Okay, good. So the third one is procreation. The guy provides half of the genes for having kids. Turns out it's really easy to do that for a guy, right? But he also wants to stick around for parenting, because that's how your genes actually propagate. Okay, so if a guy's around for the procreation part but not the parenting part, not so great. You want a little bit of both. But in the meantime, you got 4 things, right? You got protection, provision, procreation, and parenting. Okay, so now let's see what's happened in modern days. So women have jobs. Guess what they don't need? They don't need provision. We got rid of the saber-toothed cats and the marauding tribes on the street. So guess what you don't really need that much? Protection, right? Procreation, okay, fine, maybe that's useful. But you know what? My cousin just had a kid, and there is no dad. She went to a sperm bank, selected the best-looking, smartest guy there, and now she has a kid. So you don't entirely need that anymore. Parenting, okay. Well, she's a single parent, but it's really nice to have a second person around, and that's kind of the way evolution has worked for millions of years. So that's kind of the thing. Come on in. So these are the 4 P's. You need these 4 things, and your brain is still tuned to that. But it turns out that modern circumstances have made a lot of these not entirely necessary. But I want to emphasize, you still want to look for those qualities in a guy. Okay? So you want to make sure the guy is capable of protecting you, even though you don't really need the protection. You want to make sure a guy is capable of providing for you, even though you make your own money and you don't need his provision. You want to make sure a guy is capable of being a good procreator and parent, even though you can kind of do it on your own with some difficulty. But these are qualities that still matter, because for 3 million years, these are the genes that you've been given, so it's still going to matter. Okay? So ignore those at your peril. And this guy, Klaus, right? Where did he rank on the providing aspect? Well, she was supporting him, so okay. Where did he rank on the protecting aspect? Well, he was beating her up, so where did he rank on the parenting procreation aspect? Well, the sex was good, so we'll give him, like, you know, maybe a 5 out of 10 on the procreation, but he wasn't there for the parenting, right? When the kid needed somebody to be around. Okay. And yet, this perfectly sane, smart, Harvard-educated woman kept on with him. Why? Kept on saying with him, why? 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 Because of chemicals, Emmett, that's why. Because she fell in love with the guy. So I'm here to tell you today that you've been sold a bad story. You've been sold a story that has been kind of making you not entirely happy, maybe even miserable sometimes. What you've been sold is the Western romantic ideal, which is that you're supposed to fall in love with someone and then go off into the sunset happily ever after. And what I'm here to tell you is that falling in love with someone and then marrying them or having a long-term relationship with them is a lot like getting really drunk and then going on to some Toyota dealership and buying a new car. It's called making a big-ticket decision, the biggest ticket decision of your entire life, under conditions of extreme mental impairment. Because what happens when you are in love is that your prefrontal lobe, the part of your brain that's designed to make good judgment, goes, just shuts down. And so you're like, my mate is perfect in every way. He's so great, even though he's a deadbeat who makes no money and beats me up and doesn't show up when I need him at the hospital, right? So if it can happen to her, I want you to recognize that it can happen to anyone. I use her story because she's not some high school graduate in West Virginia who can't support herself, right, and has mean relatives. She is the people you know. She is a lot like you and me. And so if it can happen to her, I want you to recognize it can happen to you as well. So today's theme is to improve the selection process so you don't get into a mess in the first place, because getting into the mess in the first place is a lot like trying to lose weight once you've gained it. It's so much easier to not gain it in the first place. So we'll try to keep you from making the bad decisions in the first place, okay? And then also suggest some remedies for any situation you've already gotten yourself in, and then give you some protocols for doing it well henceforth. How does that sound? Yes? Okay, so prevention works so much better than treatment, okay? So the Western romantic narrative, okay? And let's just be honest. Has this been successful? Is this a good organizing principle for society? And I look at the end results, which is that everybody in this room has probably had more than five boyfriends. Anybody who has not had more than five relationships in this room? Okay. So if you've had five or less, that means there's been an 80% failure rate in just the boyfriend relationships. For most people, it's over 90%. And if you have been married, right, you know that the statistics are around 50%. So marriages, when two people stand in front of all their friends and make incredibly embarrassing promises to the world, fail half the time. That's a coin flip, okay? So I do not want your happily ever after to only be as good as a coin flip. You deserve better than that. Yes? Better than a coin flip? Maybe two coin flips in a row, maybe, okay? So 75%, how about that? Or maybe more. And the thing is, there are societies in which that number is much, much higher. And these societies in which they have arranged marriages. Like, how can that possibly work? I just read this book about this community around West Africa where the marriages can be so arranged that you never even met the person that you're supposed to get married to. Your family just kind of decides, oh yeah, that guy will be good for you. Do it. And you know what? They have an incredibly high success rate because of the context, because of the way the entire relationship is structured, because of the sacredness of the bond. And I don't necessarily recommend you marrying somebody sight unseen. That's a little crazy. But the thing is, there are other setups other than the Western romantic ideal that can and have worked for other people. Okay? So the thing to remember is that evolution does not care about your happiness. Evolution cares that you reproduce. That's it. So the whole falling in love thing is designed to put you in this state called limerence, which is that being in love thing. Lasts for about 18 months on average, sometimes as long as 4 years. And that just happens to be enough time for a kid to turn into a toddler and not die. So a four-year-old can almost kind of fend for itself. And then the limerence thing goes away because evolution has done its job. It's hooked up two people for long enough to reproduce and raise the kid to a point where it can potentially be viable. Okay? So I, on the other hand, I'm interested in your happiness, and I'm hoping you are also interested in your happiness. Are you interested in happiness?
Yes.
Happiness? How about misery? Misery? Anybody for misery? Okay. So there's always one. I'm going to go for happiness, so, and I hope you guys are too. And my title, my job title for the past 3 years has been Happiness Engineer. That's a book I'm working on. And this is all part of your happiness. So if you can get this right, this is one of the big, big, big factors that lead to your overall health and happiness in life, which is healthy, robust relationships. Okay, good. So if falling in love is a bad idea, so what's a good idea? How about loving someone? So love, is love good? Can anybody argue with love is bad? I'm going to go with love is good. Love is good. So falling in love, it feels so good. I mean, it's like getting heroin mainlined. It's awesome for you, right? But the thing is, getting heroin mainline also has side effects, which is that you get addicted, your judgment falls apart, you know, you lose your teeth, it's just not pretty, right? So on the other hand, loving someone is very different. And my definition of loving someone is this just gradual appreciation of someone that increases over time and leads to mutual growth. So you catalyze each other's growth, you become a better version of you in the presence of this person. That's love. And the thing about love is it takes time. And one of my colleagues slash teachers, whom I have a lot of respect for, her name is Alison Armstrong, and I encourage you to look up her stuff. And one of the things that she says that had a great effect on me was, she said, anytime you meet a guy or a girl, right, and you feel those butterflies in your stomach and you get really excited, that's your sign to run, okay? Because you're about to make really bad decisions, okay? And yet, everybody uses that as a rubric of, this is great. And as a guy, I can tell you that that is totally correct, and I can tell you also how little power I have over it. So, you know, I walk down the street, see this girl, I'm like, wow, she's amazing. And I go talk to her, and this goes on for a while until I realize, no, it's just some person off the street, right? And yet, evolution so badly wants us to connect with people who you find attractive and then get those juices going, and it feels so real in the moment until the horrible breakup, you know, 3 months later, you're like, wow, I didn't really know this person that well. So that happens. So if I were to draw a curve, right, let's see what we got here. Let me use this instead. So this is the Western Romantic Ideal. This is time. This is intensity. Okay, so Western Romantic Ideal goes to something like this. You meet someone and you go whoop, like that. Now, the curve only goes so far, the graph only goes so far. So where do you go from there? Okay. Right? The loving somebody ideal starts somewhere like here. Hey, this person's kind of interesting. You go on a date. Well, that person was interesting. I'd like to see him again. Finding out all kinds of things about this person that you know I didn't know about. Well, okay, they're interesting, maybe not that much. But then, hey, look, really kind. I really like the way he treated those dogs or those kids at the playground or the way they interact with the waiter. Anyway, the point is this kind of goes on, right? And it's not some smooth, monotonically increasing thing. It does go up and down. This is reality. This is real love. And this is the Western Romantic Ideal. Western. And one of the reasons I paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to go to medical school was so I could write like this that nobody else could read. So did I succeed? Was it worth it? Okay, good. Thanks. So the thing is, if you're here, right, guess which one feels better? The top one. If you're here, guess one. Which one feels better? That one, right? All the way out to here. And this could be 6 months. This could be 12 months. It could be a long time, right? And so you think, and your body goes, oh yeah, this is a great idea. And falling in love is like an overwhelming experience, right? But if you are, in fact, banking on living, say, 10 or 20 or 30 more years, this is where you actually want to be, okay? And I'd like to make the radical suggestion that falling in love with someone you love is a really good idea, and perhaps a better idea than falling in love with a total stranger, which is what most people do, okay? So get to know people. And that's that. We're going to go into that theme later on in today's talk. So any questions so far? Yes.
So
Claire.
Is this entire paradigm for just the female psyche, or is it also, would you tell them this as well?
Oh, I would definitely tell guys to do this too, yeah. Guys, the thing is, guys just can't control themselves. I mean, the guys fall in love far faster. I mean, hello, exhibit A, right? So, and they're just super susceptible to looks. And they're like, oh, yes, all my prayers answered are right here. So they need to hear this a lot more. They just can't control themselves as well. So you have, women have this unusual gift. And it took me a long time to realize that they can actually do this. And, you know, I see all these, like, really nice, really well put together, totally beautiful women with guys who are kind of like a little dumpy. I'm like, huh, what's going on here? And what I found was that women have the power to make a guy who makes her feel great look great. So he starts out as not entirely repulsive, but not Brad Pitt, right? And gradually over time, he starts to get better looking. So I call this the symbolic shift, which is that you start with something that, for example, I don't know, like, what's something perfectly mundane in this room? Like this, right? So you start this, and you know, it's a good-looking enough marker, but it's not like the marker itself is making you feel great, right? And if you look at the face of Marlene Dietrich, that's like, whew, big boost. But this is itself, right? But then if I give this marker to you as like a token of my affection, then you will hold this later on and go, oh, wow, this marker represents our friendship or love or something, right? Or some ratty t-shirt that my sister gave me a few years ago I still have because my sister gave it to me, right? So that's a symbolic shift. I don't like the t-shirt because it's gray and ratty. I like it because my sister gave it to me and it feels good when I wear it. So similarly, people become, you start out with a certain initial reaction, visceral reaction you have because of what somebody looks like, which is going to be different depending on what type you gravitate towards. But over time, you're going to have a whole bunch of experiences with that person that will replace that initial impulse with something much deeper. It's like, oh, this person was kind to me that time when we went hiking. This person, you know, brought me some really nice, thoughtful presents. This person supported me through college or med school or whatever. And then the person becomes a symbol. You see the symbol, and you get all the feelings that the person stands in for. And so the looks only matter so much in the end, which is totally true of all these long-term couples that you've seen. You're like, how'd they end up together, and how does this person still love this other person who, although beautiful on the inside, may look like wrinkly and old on the outside? How does this still work? And that's because of the symbolic shift. So bank on the symbolic shift. And this is particularly important for you as a woman because you have two major commodities that you trade on. One is looks, and the other is character. One of those is perishable. The other one appreciates. Okay? Looks are going to perish over time. I'm sorry to break it to you. I'm sure I'm the only person who's noticed this, but it does. It does. It does. And when you're in that prime of youth and you're just afire with all the signs of life and fertility and the things that turn guys on, right? That does not go on forever. However, your character, your kindness, your generosity, that is something that can keep on improving and increasing over time. Okay, so count on the symbolic shift to work for you. Count on it to work for guys that you meet. And that allows you to date a much broader expanse of men that you thought. Because up to now you're thinking, oh, he has to be at least 6'2 and, you know, blonde or something. You realize that you can actually really get along with a whole bunch of guys that you didn't think you could because they actually make you feel good. You are capable of making a guy who makes you feel good look good. Yes.
So for women who don't have a lot of time, have a lot going for them,
yeah,
don't necessarily need somebody else,
yeah,
how do you, you know, obviously it makes sense if you're looking at the two curves then that the top curve is going to be much more worth their time and their energy,
right,
if you've got other things you could be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, A, like, how do you, what do you encourage people to spend their time?
Mm-hmm. No, I'm just getting it closer to getting the board better.
How do you encourage people to spend their time, you know, with someone who's maybe then not as exciting or rewarding in the beginning?
Yeah.
B, like, what do you look for in that? And C, how long do you give that curve until you're supposed to know whether it's worth your time or not?
I'm so glad you asked all those questions because those are all the things I'm about to answer. Thanks. In the presentation. It's almost like I planted her there. Good job, good job. Cookies later. All right, so what I want you guys to do is to set yourselves up for success. And by guys, I mean ladies. But, you know, the colloquial is you call everybody guys. So what I'd like you ladies to do is to be set up for success. So falling in love is a supremely potent mechanism. So to have a chance of bypassing it, it's important to set things up such that you kind of have to force yourself to do things the right way. And I call this actually has a name apparently. It's called the Odysseus Protocol. So if you guys know the story of the Iliad, so Odysseus was about to go through the place where the sirens hang out in the sea. And he's heard that these sirens, you know, they got this amazing song and he really wants to hear it, but he also knows for a fact everybody who hears the sirens ends up running into the rocks and sinking. So he didn't want his ship to sink, but he wanted to hear the science. So he said, okay, guys, here's what we do. You all plug your ears up with wax, but you tie me to the mast and let me hear the song, but whatever I say, just ignore me. And I'm like, cool. So that's exactly what they do. They plug their ears, and they tie him on the mast, and he's like, you motherfucker, you bastard, let me free, I'm going to kill you. Like, yeah, whatever. And in the meantime, he's hearing the sirens, and he wants to go enjoy them, and he wants to destroy the ship, but he can't, because beforehand, he set up things in a way to predispose himself towards not doing stupid shit, okay? And they go through the waters. He gets to hear the song and not die. Win-win. So, you ladies know that we have this super-duper potent mechanism called falling in love that wants to waylay you. We would like you to do things in a way that makes you happy. Okay, good. So, first step is guy selection. So, guy selection. What kind of guy do you want to select? You want good guys. And what's a good guy? A good guy is a guy who has both heart and spine. So, this is my very simple binary classification. So heart is compassion. Heart is kindness. Spine is strength. Okay? Guy who's able to protect you. Guy who's able to stand up for himself. So you want a guy who has both heart and both spine. I call him Victor. Okay? You do not want a guy who has just heart, because he's the sensitive new age guy. I call him Lance, right? He's nice, but he kind of doesn't really stand up for himself. Okay, so you don't want Lance. And you don't want the guy who's just spine. He's basically a big bullying brute. I call him Biff for obvious reasons. So you got Biff, you got Lance, you got Victor. I want you to be looking for Victor, okay? What you do not want psychopaths. You do not want status mongers. You do not want players, and you don't want wimps. And if I were to boil down how to spot a bad boy versus a good guy, there's one thing and one thing only. It's look for extremes, right? Extremes of appearance. You have this guy with absolutely perfect hair, not a single hair out of line, you know, awesome $2,000 suit, and you're like, wow, this guy looks great. But it's kind of extreme. You got a guy who's supremely disheveled, and he always wears flip-flops and goes everywhere on skateboard. You have a guy who's supremely successful. Even that can be a bad boy, because guess what he doesn't have time for? You! He's got time for his company and his IPO, but he does not have time for you. So extremes mean bad boy. You kind of want the guy who has his stuff together, but is in this middle zone. Okay, so extremes, look for extremes. So the questions, how do you spot the good guys and how do you weed out the psychopaths? So the psychopaths are important. It's only 1 out of 200 or 1 out of 300 of the population, but if you get one in your life gets really messed up. So it's important to spot them because they tend to be really charming. They've gotten really good at getting what they want, and there's a fair amount of overlap between psychopaths and sexual predators, so better spot them early, especially in the era of Me Too, like all these people are surfacing up. You do not want to end up with the Harvey Weinstein. Terrible idea. Okay, so the question you want to ask to sort out the psychopaths is, as you're sitting there, you're having a day, you're just talking, casual conversation, you ask something along the lines of, hey, when was the time that you, like, were, what's like the most embarrassing moment you ever had? What's the time when you felt really embarrassed? And you're thinking, huh? What? Why is this question revelatory? This question reveals the true person, because most of us will stop, think, I'm like, oh crap, oh yeah, that, oh my god, that was terrible. You'll get a color change, you'll get like embarrassed body language, they'll try to hide, they'll put their hand on their face. These are all signs that somebody is actually finding an embarrassing episode and feeling a little bit of that embarrassment emotion. And guess what psychopaths are incapable of feeling? Embarrassment or empathy, right? So embarrassment is one of the deep empathic responses, because you only get embarrassed if you're worried about what other people are feeling, right? So my moment would be high school, academic decathlon, the super quiz, everybody's looking, and they ask some gimme question about the Tilden Hayes election, which I totally shank. So that's one of the elections which then weren't so common, elections in which one person got the popular vote but still lost. Yeah, one of those. So, and I said that the person who got the popular vote won, and I was wrong. So even today, I think about that when I was like 16 years old, I'm mildly embarrassed. Because, dude, you studied for this shit for 3 months. How could you miss that? Okay, so the point is, you ask the question, when was the time you're really embarrassed? And then you look, and you watch. Like, okay, color change. If he just kind of goes, I don't know, What do you mean? It's not good, okay? So notice that. You can ask other questions along those lines, right? What's the nicest thing you've ever done for someone, right? And then they're also going to have a certain empathic response, right? And they're going to be embarrassed. And like actual nice people don't like to brag about this stuff and talk about it. So they'll be like, oh, I can't talk about it. I mean, come on. No, really, what's the nicest thing you've done in recent memory for someone? So you ask these questions to evoke an empathic response, and then you watch for it. Okay, so that's 1 out of 200, but it's something you just... there's also a spectrum. So you don't necessarily end up with psychopaths on dates, but you end up with people who are somewhere on that spectrum. You want them to be as empathic as possible. Empathy is a very important capability. Okay, so that's a question to sort out the psychopaths. So another question which is really important to see what kind of person you're dealing with is the high school question. Hey, what were you like in high school? And what you're looking for is you're looking to see if this person was popular in a status way or popular in a likability way. There's two kinds of popularity. So there's status and there's likability. Status means, yeah, I was captain of the football team, and yeah, I had all these girlfriends, and I was really cool. People really liked me. It was awesome, right? And you're like, okay, mental note made, right? And then there's a likability person. It's like, yeah, I was student body president. I did this. I helped out with this project with the homeless and, you know, improve the school food system, blah, blah, blah. You know, help with after-school tutoring. And you're like, ah, likability. Okay? So the likability popularity is about serving other people, kindness, and all the things that really matter in interpersonal relationships. And the status popularity is all about me. So that's how you end up with an egotist. That's how you end up with a narcissist. So that's a really important question. Now, most people are going to be somewhere in the middle of the popularity thing, but asking what they were like when they were an adolescent gives you all kinds of information, if only just the way they talk about it, right? So I was in that middle zone. I wasn't, like, popular in any noticeable way, but I had a lot of friends. And so that's on the likability scales. Like, did you have a lot of friends there, right? And a lot of these people would end up shooting a whole bunch of strangers up. They start out by not having a lot of friends. So it's important to ask these questions and find out where they were in that social constellation. Okay. Now, this is why, this is my first plus tonight for meditation. This is why meditation is so important. Because when you meditate, it gives you the superpower. It gives you the superpower of attunement to other people's feelings. What it does, it allows you to kind of take the etch-a-sketch of your brain, an etch-a-sketch little gizmo that kids here play with, you draw on it, and you shake it, and it's clear, right? So it's like you clear the etch-a-sketch, and now you become this very clear receiving station for other people's thoughts, emotions, reactions, okay? So meditation then also clears you so you can actually feel things and know they're coming from you or from the outside. So that's why meditation is so important. It allows you to pay attention. So you ask the guy the question, so, you know, when's the last time you're really embarrassed? Oh, wait, I'm with my phone. And then you miss the reaction. That's no good. You want to be able to actually observe, notice, and feel yourself. Attunement. Attunement is what we call this. Attuning yourself to other people. Okay, good. So questions about this little module here. Finding the good guys, avoiding the bad guys. Yes. Was it Anna?
Ellen.
Yes. You're Swedish?
I'm Sweden.
Oh, okay. Right. So, Ellen sees the red flags and brushes them away. Who else has maybe once or twice done that before? Okay, yeah, okay, good. So that again is why meditation is so important, because the meditation allows you to feel the alarm and actually heed it, as opposed to go, oh yeah, that can't be right. Okay, so that's one thing. Just become highly attuned to yourself and trust your intuition. The other thing which I highly recommend when it comes to red flags is to consult friends. Because your friends, whom you've had for a really long time, which I hope have your best interests in mind, they really see this stuff, right? So there's that 0.1% of the time when they're jealous and they want the guy for themselves, but the other 99.9% of the time, they're like, no, this guy is no good for you, okay? And they will know instantly. So if you have a chorus of friends who are all saying the same thing, and then you are saying the opposite, chance of you being right and them being wrong is small. Listen to the friends, okay? So if it's like 10 to 1 friends to you, that vote wins. So we can talk about that some more, because it's actually very difficult to do, because when you're in that state of limerence and interest, you're like, well, okay, I saw this, but That's why you need to have criteria set up beforehand. So we're going to get into that. So, yes? Remind me of that. I'm going to address that at the end. So that's the what you see is all there is problem. Okay, so because what happens is that as humans, we're always trying to solve the problem that's directly in front of us, right? Whereas there could be another much more interesting problem we could be solving or going somewhere where there are no problems, right? And yet when you meet a guy and you're like, oh, this is interesting, then you're like, oh, well, okay, let me figure this out, as opposed to, oh, how do I like to be treated? Is this how I actually want to feel? Do I want to be tested? Do I want to be questioned? Does my integrity need to be under doubt? So we'll get to that. What you see is all there is. Okay, good. Number two is the presentation of you. And we would like you to be able to present the best possible version of you in a given dating situation. So what do I mean by that? Let's talk about driving. How many of you drove here? Okay, all of you? Great. Okay, so... And I drive here in this town at all. And studies have been done on this, so this has been scientifically proven. I know you need scientists to tell you this, but it turns out we're not at our best when we're driving. It's true. So that version of you that's like flipping people off, saying, screw you, cutting people off, and trying to get in that little space in front of you before the other person does, not the best version of you. Who knew, right? So knowing that, would you want to date that version of you, right? I mean, and would you want that version of you to be the one that it gets presented to the world? This is a question worth asking. Because there are other situations in which you are a better version of yourself. Anybody here go to church? Or some church-type activity? Okay. Engage in charitable work, maybe? Go to yoga class? Go to meditation class? Okay, great. So... which version of you would you rather date? The one who is on the 405 freeway screaming at the person in front of you whom you do not know, or the version of you that just came out of meditation or church? Meditation or church? Okay, fantastic. Okay, I'm going to ask for a little more interactivity just because that way I get your voices up and I can actually feel you more. So, which version? Church you or freeway you?
Church.
All right, good. Not that you have to go to church, but the idea is that there are versions of you. And there are better versions of you. And you want the best version of you to show up when it comes to dating, relationships, making a good impression. Okay, good. So, what I'd like you to do now is to do an exercise. So, if you have paper to write upon, that would be great. And I want you to think of 3 to 4 venues, 3 to 4 occasions during a given week or month when you are at your best. The best version of you. And by best, I mean kind, generous, inclusive, attentive, considerate, vulnerable, hot, connected to your values, wondrous, off your phone. So all these things. And right now, if you're using your phone to write, that's perfectly okay. But generally speaking, attentive, inclusive, vulnerable, connected to your values. The question is, think of 3 or 4 occasions, 3 or 4 places in which you are at your best. The best version of you shows up. And when you have 3 or 4 of those down, go ahead and look up so I know you're ready. Excellent. All right. Would you like to share? Tell me your name again.
Cynthia.
Well, what do you got?
Some of it, I guess I'm a little embarrassed to say. I find I'm best when I'm at my therapy session.
Superb.
I'm also good when I'm doing my Pure Barre classes and when I'm meditating.
Excellent. Good ones. Caroline, would you like to share?
Sure. I feel my best when after I work out, after I just taught meditation or my group meditation.
Workout, taught meditation. Okay, fantastic. Okay, anybody else would like to share? Put your hand up and just read it off. By the way, noticing certain that we've only heard from two people, we're already noticing patterns. So, yes. Claire.
So I'll say I had two affairs, and my actual first one was I messed up social events with people.
There you go. With people you like, right?
Yeah.
Okay, people. Good. When you're being social. Okay, good. Fantastic.
Best when I'm with my friend's kids.
Best with your friend's kids. Fantastic. Okay. Anything else? Yes.
Yoga class,
fantastic. Okay. Do you have one?
After a good dance class, if I master the choreography, I feel like a better.
Fantastique. All right. So, how many of you put down there on a date? Funny! Sort of, yes. But my point is, that's not when we're at our best, right? A date is a completely contrived thing. So the other highly iconoclastic thing that I'm going to tell you today, besides falling in love is a terrible idea, is dating is a terrible idea. Going on a date is a terrible idea. It is not the best version of you showing up, okay? It's like you're showing up to an evening log job interview that you have to pay for. Who does that, right? And there's no job at the end. You can't even get the job. So what you want to do is instead you want to arrange your potential encounters with men you'd like to meet around the activities where the best version of you shows up. If you go to meditation, there might be guys in the meditation class. They're already there, prefab. They already like this activity you're in. Meet them there. You have a class that you dance at, meet people right after that, or invite them to the class. You have a session with your favorite therapist, meet somebody right after that. Whatever it is, they don't have to come with you to the therapy session, but the best version of you has showed up. Use that to your advantage. And the best way you can meet guys is by meeting them where they're already where you want them to be. So if you play ping pong, you go to the ping pong club, guess what? Whole bunch of guys who play ping pong. You already have this activity in common. And the three or four that you just mentioned, that's where the best version of you pops up. And chances are, a really good version of him is also going to pop up. So and the other thing to remember is that this city, this world, it's a closed system. It's the same people, right? So how is it that people are awful on the road and they're really nice in a church? It's all about context. So create the context that predisposes you to success, okay? Create the context. I mean, you already all know that meeting guys at a singles bar where everybody's drunk and the music is loud and people are annoying does not necessarily predispose you to success. You know that going to somewhere else, like after church meetup, exercise class, much better, right? Same people, different context, different results altogether, okay? And conspire to meet men at these places. So as a man who has been doing yoga since 1999, I can tell you that exactly one woman has spoken to me after class, okay? And they want to meet somebody like me. I mean, not necessarily me. I mean, I'm just an average guy. But they want to meet the guy who is educated, who does yoga, who does meditation, who has a job, and yet they have never reached out. So this is an incredible opportunity.
How would they know anything about that?
Pardon me?
How would they know anything about that from a yoga class?
It's self-selection. You're already at a yoga class. You're somebody who's interested in health.
One thing in common.
Pardon me?
That's one, maybe two derivative things in common.
I know, but you're meeting somebody. I mean, it's like meeting somebody at a penguin conference, right? That means you both have penguins in common. That's a pretty rare thing. So,
That's more niche.
In 1999, I guess yoga was more niche. But now it's a lot less niche. But the point is, you have something in common, right? And you're going to be at your, first of all, I think a lot of women escape yoga class because they think, oh no, I'm all sweaty and gross. Oh my God, you're the hottest you'll ever be. You're giving off every single sign of health. Your skin is flushed. You just exercise. Your endorphins are pumping through your body. This is a great opportunity. So the point is, one more place where we can potentially meet guys. It's going to be, the ratio is going to be skewed in favor of women, but the few guys who are there may well be worth meeting if they have both heart and spine. No lances. Questions about this part? Yes, tell me your name again.
Julie.
Julie, yes.
So maybe you're going to cover this later on, but my most recent experiences, I've definitely met, or the people that I've met climbing, and someone out in the desert, and we went out and had a little times, and so it is positive in the contextual way.
Yeah.
Even, it wasn't like, okay, I met you, and then now we're going to, go home together. It was being activity partners.
First, right. Yes.
Right. And then it kind of builds, I don't know, over a few months. Mm-hmm. But then they still end up being wildly inappropriate for me. Or there's something that comes out of the work through hanging out there, you're like, oh, that's
possible.
Not okay. And it sort of makes me wonder if this is not the right context for meeting people in, because, but at the same time, everything was just kind of a shot in the dark in a way. And so I find myself in this position where it's like, oh, well, I shouldn't be, necessarily looking to meet guys at a climbing gym or in the desert, or because, you don't know any better about that than you do about someone on Bumble or whatever. Even, I was even set up with one of these people, and
Right. So there are no.
It's
a great point you bring up. It's actually the entire next section, so I will go over that in detail. And just to give you a taste of what's coming up is you want to set up circumstances where you have casual continuity. So one of the problems with the data is super contrived, and you're like, so what are you really like? And there's just nothing comfortable about that. But if you have an activity partner, you get to see what that person how that person behaves in a more natural context. And it still may not be the right person for you, but at least you're getting a much bigger sample size of their behavior that's accurate. Yes, Ellen.
I love to go to concerts.
Concerts.
And I've met a couple of guys in the month. The thing is because you're kind of on a high, right? And I feel like because of the context, because of it's accessible and stuff, it feels less maybe serious.
Right.
And then it's difficult to see the gay after.
Okay.
That makes sense.
I don't know. So is there a question there? Okay, so if there's a question, make sure you have a question. I will address that directly. But yeah, I see where that's going. And again, you want to predispose yourself towards success depending on what your goal is. There is nothing wrong with hooking up with guys at festivals. It's tremendously entertaining. However, separate entertainment from actual relationship potential, right? Most of you will not mistake cheesecake for a main course. You're like, that's desserts, that's the main course. And you will not make an entire diet made of cheesecake. Because, in the end, you're probably going to end up becoming overweight, not very healthy, and the worst part is you're going to end up hating cheesecake. So that's cool, but just know what part of your life people fit into. Deb, was there a question?
Yeah, so you were saying that nobody asked you after yoga class, and I would love to hear your opinion on a woman approaching a man as a first,
Ooh, approach. Well, that's great. That's fantastic. I'm sure it's been more than one. I mean, it's probably been two at least. But the greater point I'm making is that that's the time when people usually don't interact, and it's like a really great time for people to interact. You just kind of hang out. If you go to a yoga retreat, then everybody's kind of hanging out. And yes, amazing things have happened at yoga retreats because now it's the whole context where you want to hang out. We will address that briefly. Today it's not about specific techniques, but that is also possible. And actually, somebody else asked that too. So yeah, I will go over that. Okay. Now, got a bunch of material here, so let me fly through this for you. When are you not your best self? Okay? So you are not your best self when you are worried about this question, am I enough? And I've gotten about 5,000 letters from the ladies over the past 10 years, and that's basically a substance of every one of those letters. Am I enough? I went out with this guy, we really hit off, set up a second date for next week, he hasn't called me back, am I enough? Met this guy at a festival, you know, we hit it off, we hooked up, he hasn't called me and he hasn't texted me, returned my text in the 4 days, am I enough, right? So all these versions of am I enough pop up. And the problem with that question is that's not a game you can win. You cannot win the am I enough game, because let's say you have a perfect butt, so you can say, yes, my butt looks great in these jeans, right? And guess what happens? They change the genes and they change the butt standards. And it's like, ah, what happened, right? So there is no chance of ever being enough if that's what the game you're playing. And there also is no you. There's that whole idea of no self from Buddhism. It's like, which part of you is you? Is it your toe? Is it your arm? Is it your hair? Is it your nose? Which part of you is self? So the thing you can do instead is three things. One, you can be the light. Okay, so people ask me to summarize this book in 30 seconds or less. I'm like, 30 seconds? How about 3 words? The 3 words are be the light. So what does that mean? That means choice A is am I enough, right? You can't win that. Choice B is, hey, you look fantastic. Love what you've done with that outfit. Hey, that presentation you made the other day, oh my God, learned so much. Thank you so much. Hey, that meal you made, that was heavenly. That was awesome. You, I appreciate you. You are amazing. Okay, so when you give people appreciation, when you give a man devotion, when you make a man feel like he's 50 feet tall, you have a monopoly on men. Because guess what? Nobody else is doing exactly that. Nobody is making other people feel great. And you can do that. It's an unlimited commodity. And yet, for some reason, people think it's scarce. I want you all to think about the 5 compliments you've given in the last month. If you can't come to 5, that's okay, because that's pretty much everybody's life. You can't. When's the last time you gave somebody a compliment? Make it a habit. It's free. It makes you feel good. It makes them feel good. So this is what happens. You appreciate somebody, right? Then they light up. We're hypersocial people. So when I see you light up as a result of something I did, I light up. When I light up, I become that glow-in-the-dark person. Everybody's like, who is that glow-in-the-dark Caroline? I want to be around that. And so now you solve the loneliness problem, you solve the choice problem, you have choice of people to hang out with, and also, most important, you feel great. And you're coming from a place of abundance because you have this unlimited supply of appreciation, of love, of joy that you can give to the world, okay? This is the power that cannot be taken away from you, okay? Looks can be taken away. Am I enough can be taken away. Appreciation, nobody can take away from you. So you practice that, you become invincible, you become superwoman. Okay, so that's one. And I mentioned in the ad for this event that I would tell you the secret of the women who are true goddesses, who are truly irresistible. And one of them was the wife of a billionaire, another one was a leader of a cult, another one was a serial entrepreneur, amazing, amazing woman, just remarkable women in their own right. And one thing that they all did was they made their men feel like they were 100 feet tall. They just gave the guy complete devotion. They're like, you are amazing. You're great. And, you know, I'm sitting in front of this woman and she just, you know, she just read my book and she gave me this torrent of compliments that just blew my hair back, even though I have no hair. It was amazing. It was like, whoa, that's insane. I never heard that before. I'm like, okay, I get why you are married to a billionaire. Because that's hard, right? I mean, she's 50 years old. He's a billionaire. He has a choice of anybody he wants to be with. How does she make this guy feel so good that he only wants to be with her? So she has a monopoly. Okay. Number two. Point two. Be the buyer, not the seller. Okay. I have a coffee table, right? I come to you. I'm like, hey, you want my coffee table? You're like, I don't know. I mean, there's a whole bunch of other coffee tables. Maybe. We'll talk later, right? Okay. So who has more power here, the buyer or the seller? The buyer. Okay. The buyer has the power, okay? And yes, for whatever reason, both men and women, they come from the direction of being the seller. Hey, look at me. Look at all these really cool things I did on my Instagram. Look at all these great degrees I've got. Hey, I make money too. Please buy me. Okay, that's not going to work, right? It might work, but even if it does work, you end up with what you can get, not what you want, right? On the other hand, you're like, wow. You went to Penn. That's great. Did you not get into any other colleges or something? Was that the best one you got into? Or whatever, right? You don't have to be mean about it. But the point is, if you are being the discerning buyer, it's a completely different interaction, right? This comes out of game theory. This has been mathematically proven. You want to be the selector. And guess what? Evolution, 3 million years of it, has already placed you in the position of the selector. Because you are female, you get to select. So select. Be selective. Okay, do your hair, do your makeup, you know, wear the sexy clothing, show 40% skin if you need to. But in the end, remember that you're the selector. If you are the one thinking, oh, please, will he like me? Oh, I am going to show him how cool I am. It doesn't work that way. Be the interviewer. If you're on that job interview, call a date, be the interviewer. Who has more power in the interview, the interviewer or the interviewee? Interviewer, of course. Be the interviewer. So put yourself in the position of power. There are no exceptions to this. Anytime when things did not go well, think back and remember, were you buying or were you selling? Yes, tell me your name again.
Mary,
yes.
But that feels at odds with also being the light.
Yes.
How do you praise someone and make them feel appreciated?
Yes.
To make sure that you're also in the position.
Excellent. Pardon me?
Or is it like a stage in the relationship?
It is definitely a stage in the relationship thing, yes. So initially, you're just trying to get to know a guy, right? It's possible to do both. This is why dating is a skill. Nobody's born learning how to be both complimentary and discerning at the same time, right? But you can do that. And if you do it well, if you make the guy feel great, but at the same time knock him back on his feel every once in a while, he's like going to get addicted to you. This is the structure of addiction, like the give and take. I mean, I'm not going to teach you how to make a guy fall in love with you in like, you know, a matter of minutes. It is possible. But if you are skillful at that, that just enhances your attractiveness. Just being in the position of interviewer makes you attractive. It's just the way it is. And if you think back to times when you were interviewed or you had a professor, anybody who was in a position of power over you, there's this natural grading of attraction that happens that way. But that's a great question. And the thing is, you want to be discerning, but it doesn't mean you have to be mean. You're just being discerning. You're asking questions and you're selecting. At the same time, you can make the person feel good and genuinely appreciate them. That's the thing about appreciation, right? If you're a sociopath or psychopath, then you compliment people because you're trying to manipulate them. If you're a nice person, you appreciate them, you just appreciate them. So I want the appreciation to be genuine. It's not something contrived, right? And if you get to know the guy, if you're asking him questions and getting to know him better, and he says something that you really appreciate, wow, you went to Peru and created this clinic for orphan Peruvian kids? That's amazing, right? So you're finding out more about him and also being appreciated at the same time. So there's some finesse involved, and they don't have to be mutually exclusive. Does that make sense? Yes.
So, because
I'm into
journalism.
Journalism what?
Yeah, I do journalism.
Okay.
So I'm used to like asking questions.
Yes.
Interviewing.
Yes.
And listening.
Yes.
And so I kind of noticed that I get to know the person very much. They
yes.
talk a lot.
Yes.
But then I don't get to talk as much.
Yes.
Which means that I get attached more easily because I get to know them and I'm like, wow, this person's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's a connection.
Mm-hmm.
But then because they don't get to know me that much, they don't get attached.
That's interesting.
At the same pace.
That's so interesting. Okay, good. So it's important to give some airtime to the other person too. So I always say that the purpose of a date is to get to know the guy in front of you as well as possible. So if you're doing it to the point that he doesn't know anything about you, there's an imbalance there. And that's why you want to make sure you have multiple meetings. Okay, so that's another thing that I talk about later on, which is have at least 3 meetings with the person. Unless the person was like utterly repulsive or had bad breath or whatever, right? Meet him at least 3 times. In as casual context as possible, because who amongst you is your best self and your authentic self on your first date? And for the people who are listening, 1 out of 15 people. So, not yet. No, nobody is, right? What?
Wait. I enjoy the fun.
Well, that's fantastic. That's not a problem. That's great. If you do, I mean, that's bonus, right? But most people, they're not their best self on a first date. So give the other person the benefit of the doubt. Give them a chance to show up in a more casual, you know, less contrived setting and reveal more of themselves. Okay, good. Number 3 is invoke your highest values, okay? Because when you remember your highest values, that gives you presence. And when you have presence, you just feel more substantial, more attractive, more solid, just like somebody that people want to be around, okay? So what I'd like you to do now, for the next minute or so, is to think of your highest values. So what really matters to you? So stuff like honesty, love, learning, appreciation, adventure. So, you know, I don't expect you to be able to do this completely right now. We have this in the book somewhere. There's a whole list of values. Go through that. That's a really important exercise. But I want you to write down at least 2 values right now. And when you have 2, look up here so I know you're ready. Okay, great. So who would like to share a value? Just say it out loud. You don't have to. Yes.
Active and good communicator.
Fantastic. Okay, good.
Love and adventure.
Love it. Fantastic. And she lives that. She just came back from Barcelona. Okay, what else? Okay, good. So you have some. You ever written something down? Put your hand up. You have something written down? Okay, great. So close your eyes. Close your eyes and actually feel the first of those on that list. So love, adventure, communication, connection, whatever it is. Imagine a time in the past or maybe in the future when you're truly, deeply experiencing that value. Okay? And then take that feeling and turn it up. Imagine you have a volume dial for that feeling. Take that volume dial and go crank it up. And notice how that feels. And now open your eyes. And notice how that feels different. And notice how you look different. I can see you, you can't see you, but I can see you. And you're like, you're a little more lit up, right? And it's like, boom, you just connected with that deep value of yours, right? And if you do three of those, you'll be even more lit up. And so when you do that, what happens is you have these values at the forefront of your mind and also your emotions. And then you can see if this guy kind of meshes with that, if you are resonating. So two strings that are at the same frequency, you pluck one, they start resonating. So this is really important. So the three things. One, to be your best self, be the light, okay? Two, be the buyer, not the seller. And three, resonate with your highest values by invoking them, okay? And next week's talk, same time, same place, is called Find Your Voice, How to Be a Compelling Speaker. And that's where I'm going to teach you how to have presence and do the physical things that actually change the way you feel and the way the world perceives you so you can give presentations that knock over the world and win elections even. Because guess what? It's on you. Nobody else is going to do it for us. You have to be the one who makes stuff happen. Okay. So, all right, let's go to topic three. Theme three of the day is how to find him at his best, okay? So again, it's the same people, right? If you put him in a singles bar, they're going to be a certain way. If you put him on a car on the freeway, they're going to be a certain way. And guess what? If you put him in an online dating context, they're going to be a certain way too. And what is that context? It's basically the context of a singles bar with 40 million people in it instead of, say, 40, okay? So the worst singles bar in the world. Why? What is the problem with online dating? Now, I know a lot of you have had experiences on there, and maybe positive ones, and maybe you have found boyfriends or relationships, right? But I still believe that there's a fundamental problem with these media of meeting people up, okay? So, one, short attention span. I'm sorry, what was that? Oh, yes, short attention span, right. You want a long courtship. The longer time you have to spend with someone, the better chance of getting data points that are actually accurate and relevant to figuring out if it's a good fit. And it's all about fit. Remember, fit. It's not about checklists. It's about fit. How you catalyze each other's growth as human beings. Number two, commoditization of people, okay? You are not an app. You're not a ride. You're not takeout food. And yet, when you are in an app, you turn into a ride or takeout food. And even worse, you turn other people into takeout food and rides, okay? So you want people to be people. Every one of you here is a miracle. How do I know that? Because I know you started as one single cell. One cell became two, became four, became eight, 16, 32, 64, 128, 256, 512, 1,024, 2,048, 4,096, goes up to 70 trillion. And these cells all work together. If that does not blow your mind, I don't know what does. People see a little baby that's like half a day old, like, wow, a miracle. And then they take the person who's lived an extra 40 years on top of that, crossed streets without getting run over 10,000 times, got degrees and speaks like languages. That's not a miracle. That's a much bigger miracle. You are that miracle, okay? So you're the miracle. You treat every other person like a miracle too, okay? And dating apps and online dating take people out of the zone of the miraculous, turn them into commodities, and you just go, whoop, whole lifetime dismissed in 0.6 seconds. Okay. Not who you want to be, and not who you want, not the thing you want done to you as well, okay? And as women, you actually have more latitude on there. So I saw a friend of mine who's reasonably good looking in San Francisco. She got on one of these dating apps, I think it was Tinder, and within 2 days she had 157 matches, right? So that's called number three, excess false choice. Now you have, oh my God, so much abundance, this is great, but how do you sift through that? How many of those guys are really interested? How many of the guys you want to meet anyway? And again, how do you sift through that? And then you meet one guy and you like him. Oh, but there's 156 more. Maybe those are better. So you've put yourself in the zone of the paradox of choice, which is that the more choice you have, the more miserable you get. Because A, it becomes more difficult to make the choice in the first place. And B, once you render the choice, you will second guess yourself because you have all those choices you didn't even explore. Maybe those were better, right? And that will always weigh on your mind. So what you want to do is you want to have face-to-face interaction. So number four is deterioration of face-to-face civility. Okay, so face-to-face, when I say hi to you, you say hi back, right? That's what you do. You text people online, nothing comes back. You write them an email, nothing comes back. And that's supposed to be normal. Not normal, okay? So basically, people are online pretty much as they are when they're driving in their car. They're at their worst selves, and so are you. So what I encourage you to do is to get out there and meet people face-to-face through the activities you already enjoy, through friends you already know, and that way there's a back channel such that they're not going to misbehave as much, okay? Caveat, if you're older, especially if you're a woman older than 50, if you live in a smaller town, online dating can be a great way to find people because your problem is to find people who are single and, you know, it's embarrassing to ask people, so that's useful. But if you live in this metropolis like this, there's so many opportunities to meet people face-to-face, so use that first. If you'd like to use online dating as an adjunct, you can do that. But generally speaking, face-to-face is best. Okay. Theme number four for tonight is prolong the courtship. So there's a story from Shoe Dog, which is Phil Knight's excellent, excellent memoir, one of the best books I've ever read, where he talks about how he met Penny, his wife. So the way he did it was he had to get a side job to support his business. So he became a business professor at Oregon State University. And this really cute, really smart girl kept on sitting right in the front row every time he was teaching. And he's like, oh my God, she's so cute, she's so smart. I must ask her out somehow. So finally he's like, hey, we need an accountant at our new firm. You want to come work with us? And she's like, okay. So she comes over there and works for 6 months. After 6 months, he finally is like, you want to go grab some dinner after work? And she's like, okay. And then they're dating. Okay, so that's Phil Knight. That's how he met his wife. They're still married. So now it's like, oh, this guy, whatevs. And you do that like 100 more times a day. And how can you possibly give the time that people used to give to each other in courtship? So what you want to do is you want to structure things such that that is still possible. So what you want to do is you want the three C's, continuity, community, conversation, friendliness. Meet people where you have these three C's fulfilled in the venue. You can talk to them, so loud bar, not good. You want there to be some sense of community. We're here for a reason. We all like Duran Duran. We're all into Adelie Penguins. We're all into, I don't know, Brahms or something. We're all into meditation, so a sense of community. There's a reason why you're there. And finally, you want continuity. You want there to be a chance of bumping into this person again over and over casually. Again, dates are super contrived. So every time you see a date, it's like, it's a threat response. The reason why a lot of women cancel at the last minute on guys is because at the very last second, you're like, oh my God, I'm going to go meet alone this guy I don't really know very well. So your evolutionary threat response goes through the roof. You don't want to do it. Whereas casual contact, right? This is why people hook up and marry colleagues at work, people they meet at school, because you have this prolonged, you know, pseudo-courtship where you get to know what somebody's really like. Okay? So, and you want to set up the interactions to be as natural as possible. You want to see how they interact with other people, wait staff, kids, animals, underlings, overlings. You want to see what this person is like in a simulation of this thing we call life, because that's how you're going to be spending your time with them in life, not on dates. So make it such that you get accurate information. Okay. And the fifth group of stuff that I want to talk about tonight is how to not shoot yourself in the foot. So who plays tennis here? You know what an unforced error is? Okay, unforced errors. You know, you're doing a rally back and forth, and suddenly you're like, boom, and it just flies off over the net and, you know, into infinity. That's an unforced error, right? You didn't have to do that. Or when you rush the net to do a crazy volley and you miss the volley, right? So unforced error, that means you did it, nobody else did it. So number one, poor communication hygiene, okay? So for some reason, it's become common these days to just not respond to people. So, you know, for the past 7 months, I couldn't get my best friend to return an email to me, right? I see him, he's like, oh man, I'm so sorry, I'm terrible. But still, what the hell, right? So there's been this general deterioration. So if you are the one person who responds in a timely manner, in a respectful manner to people's communications, oh my God, you just go 3 standard deviations above the mean, you rule, you are going to win, okay? So number 2 is not giving it a chance. Like Chris Rock said, on a first date, it's like I'm sending my representative to meet your representative. Okay, so you want to get beyond that whole representative phase and get to the real communication, and you just have to have more interactions. So if you even remotely kind of think a guy is interesting, set up at least 3 dates, 3 interactions, or at least give him the benefit of the doubt after the first one doesn't work out, because you just don't know, right? That person is not necessarily at their best on that first meeting. Number 3 is over-dependence on devices, the phone. The mere presence of the phone within visual discernment, right? If you can even just see it, it decreases the quality of the interaction. So people are just going to be more distracted, and this has been scientifically proven. So put the phone away, turn it off, give your undivided attention to the person in front of you, because guess who is not doing that? Everybody else. So you do that, you distinguish yourself from everybody else, okay? And if anything, don't answer it, don't look at it while you're talking, but if you can put it away, that's even better, okay? And finally, I want to talk about negative self-talk. So negative self-talk is something that plagues women slightly more than men. So both men and women do it, but women, for some reason, do it more. I can't imagine why. It couldn't possibly be the fact that you go through one issue of Vogue and there's like 300 ads telling you that you're not tall enough, thin enough, and pretty enough. But hey, who knows? There are messages in the environment that are saying that you are not enough, and if you buy our crap, then you might be enough until you need more crap that we want you to buy. So this may translate into negative self-talk. I'm not enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not this enough. I'm not that enough. So before we leave, I'd like you to practice this thing called self-compassion. So self-compassion has 3 components. One is self-kindness. So let's say your friend took this brand new apple pie that you bought, you were so stoked to eat, and they slip and it falls face down on the ground. What do you tell them? You flaming idiot, how could you possibly do that? Or do you say, oh, well, bummer, let's just go get another one or something, right? Or a kid, imagine your 7-year-old niece or nephew does something like that. What would you do? Okay, and my question to you is, do you extend the same courtesy to you, right? If you flub, if you mess something up, if one cell in your Excel spreadsheet is wrong, if you, say something mean to somebody inadvertently, are you as kind to yourself? So use that same tone of voice that you would with that 7-year-old niece or nephew on you. And notice how that feels different, okay? Hey, it's okay. We'll get it right the next time. Number 2 is common humanity. So I'm on the receiving end of all the woes, dating and romantic woes of the world, so I know that you all have the same issues. And everybody writes me these long emails that are like, no, 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 this is my problem. Nobody else has this problem. And I'm like, okay, go on to this one. Okay, great, fantastic. So it helps to know that everybody else is in the same boat. Whatever your issue is, it's happening to millions, like literally millions of other people. If 0.1% of the world is having that problem, that's millions of people. So common humanity. Go easy on you. Realize that everybody else is going through the same stuff. And 3 is mindfulness. So what does mindfulness mean? Mindfulness means actually feeling what's going on. Okay, so you're disappointed in you. You made a mistake. You know, last week I was in a poker tournament. I thought I was going to win it and something terrible happened. Instead of like shutting it down and saying, oh, that never happened, actually feel it. Because when you feel it, it passes through you. It's like you become a sieve, right? And it passes through you and then it's gone. But if you make yourself like an airtight container, then it just kind of sits there and festers. So just let it be felt completely. Know what it is. Maybe even name it. I feel disappointed. I feel angry. I feel sad. And that allows you to actually activate parts of your brain that brings you into wholeness and integrity with yourself. And it actually makes you feel much, much better. And so those are 3 things. Kristen Neff is a lady who does this. She has this fantastic website that has all the stuff on there. It's called selfcompassion.org. And I encourage you to look it up and look at her stuff and practice self-compassion on a regular basis and be good to you, because you set the example for the world. If you're not good to you, then why should other people be good to you, right? Since you're your number one advocate. And in closing, I just want to advocate something perhaps a little radical and unusual, which is to think of dating as a spiritual practice. To me, spirituality means this notion of being willing to grow as a person, and growth in a positive direction, being kinder, more humane, gentler, more compassionate, more generous. So when you are meeting another person for the first time, or in a romantic or dating context, this is an opportunity to influence one another and learn from one another. This is an opportunity to make that person feel good about himself or herself. This is an opportunity for you to grow as a person. So think of that person as a sacred being, just as you are. And that just changes the entire interaction. This is not somebody who's a commodity. This is not somebody who's disposable. This is a sacred being just like you. And so here's this opportunity to have this meeting of sacred beings who happen to be living in the same era in the universe at this time, which is an amazing coincidence. So dating as a spiritual practice makes it more fun, makes it perhaps even something that you look forward to on a regular basis, as opposed to gritting your teeth and going, no, not this again. So think of each person as sacred, think of yourself as sacred, and think of dating as a potential way to become the best possible version of you. So thank you very much for your attention. I will now field your questions. Maria. The website, you mean? I think she has a book too. Her name is Kristen Neff. I'll write it up here because I have a gigantic board that I can write on. And selfcompassion.org, I think. If you look up Kristen Neff self-compassion, it'll pop up. Yes, continuity, community, and conversation friendliness. So those are the three C's of optimal venues, which we have in here as well. So this is a reference for you. All the stuff that I talk about is usually in here. And I encourage you to use it as a reference because, you know, you can read it through and that's fun. But for every phase of your life, every phase of your dating, there's specific prescriptions and ideas. So I have a bunch of them over there, $20 a pop. Happy to part you with your money. Yes, questions. So I said I'd ask you, answer your question. So dating 3 to 4 guys at the same time, good or bad? Okay, so dating is a little bit like job interviewing. So if you have one job offer, you're at the mercy of the person who has the job offer to you, gives the job offer to you. If you have two, that's good, but it's just only one more than one. Three, now you're feeling kind of comfortable. You can maybe play them against one another, negotiate better. So I encourage you to have more than one, so between one and three. So more than one is good, because then you have choice. Then if your Friday night date with the person you want doesn't work out, you can always go with the other person, right? So now the point is you also want to be entertained and have company, right? And you also have a basis of comparison. It's like, oh, this person treats me like this. I really like this. That person who I thought I really liked, not so great after all. So in your case, when you mentioned these guys, so if you had another guy who was like super attentive and nice and hi, and, you know, very quickly responding to your communication in a very respectful way, then you're like, oh, actually, I like this a lot more. And let me put in a word for nice guys, because I'm a mostly lifelong nice guy, except for vague periods of my time when I wasn't. And give time to the nice guys, okay? So, because the nice guys, they're not going to be the one to break through the scrum of like the five players around you going, hey, baby, right? So you actually have to put in the effort to go for them. And if you're looking for fun and entertainment and just simple companionship, then by all means, go have fun, play. But if you're looking for something long-term, something more solid, pay attention to the nice guys. They're not going to be as flashy. They're not going to be as loud. They're not going to be as aggressive. But they will be better for you in the long run and much more inclined to have an experience like this with you, okay? The bad boys are like crack. So one other thing that all letters I got from women for the past 10 years have in common is almost none of them had a question in them. It's very interesting, isn't it? So people say, hey, here's my situation. They give me like 4 paragraphs. And at the end, it's like, so what's your take? I'm like, that's not a question. And you only have a question once you clarify what you want. Okay, so you told me something is about what you don't want. You're not telling me what you do want. So if you can you formulate a question that includes what you want? Because then, first of all, you're 90% of the way there yourself. You solve your own problem. And then I can perhaps give you a helpful answer. So what's the question, Ellen?
So how do I make those relationships work? Like, how's it come back? Like, see the guy again, but still not get involved so seriously? You know? Thank you.
She wants to know how to casually date.
Yeah.
Emotional or physical? And how do you balance emotional and physical over time?
By the way, this is not super duper scientific, but I just kind of but what's your question? What's throw that at me again. What's the question?
Okay, so my question is, if intensity on the left hand side is, let's say, purely physical, then her what she's asking is like, right, why do I want to start a new three when I can get enough?
Yeah.
So if I can get that lower green bar and I've got a 9 in physical, 3 in emotional, it can go and then I have everything at the end. That's awesome.
Right.
But how do you add physical in there when you've got 3 in physical, 3 emotional? Why are you bothering?
Excellent question, Mary, and I'll address both of your questions that way. So you need to get very clear with what you want. And the thing is, we're not really very good at knowing what we want. So as a clinical hypnotherapist, part of my job is to help people solve their own problems, and what they come to me with, the problem that they present with, is never the real problem, right? They come to me with symptom, but not the actual problem. Hello. And so what you need to realize is that there are certain principles of what make you happy, and to just believe that those are true for you as well. And the things that do not make you happy are, for example, being disrespected, or, you know, having somebody who treats you well one day and not the other day. On the other hand, that's exactly what activates your dopamine circuitry of addiction. So it's the 50%. It's the rule of maybe. So if somebody is hot and cold 50% of the time, that's when you get maximal addiction. At the same time, it's not a formula for happiness. So you have to recognize that you are fallible as a human being. You have these circuits in you that will make you gravitate towards people who make you feel a certain way who aren't necessarily good for you. So to bring that all to what you want, you need to figure out what actually fulfills you, right? So if you're in a phase when you want hot sex, well, then by all means, go for it. But also recognize that hot sex leads to attachment because you produce this thing called oxytocin. You bond. You will actually want this person more in your life. You can't detach from that. So you got to pay the piper eventually. You cannot get away with that. So this is something perhaps called maturity, and recognizing that whatever you did up to this point has not gotten you to where you want to be. So if you have gravitated towards a certain type of guy up to now and you're still single, maybe that type of guy isn't necessarily what makes you happy. Maybe that's the kind of guy who doesn't lead to long-term relationships. If you just want to play, then by all means play. If you want to get something that's longer term, and I never say serious, because who wants to be in a serious relationship? You want to be in a fun relationship. You want to be a long-term fun relationship, then go for that, but also know what the correlates of that are. So another thing that I say in the book and to all my friends is you should never force attraction. So I did say that, yes, a guy can become more attractive over time, but I never say go out with a guy that you don't find somewhat attractive, okay? And smell is actually more important than looks. The guy has to smell right because, again, evolution. The smell is the correlate of how your immune systems line up. And the more different they are, the more complementary they are, the more likely that your kids are to be healthy. So you don't need to know all that, but the point is smell matters. And some modicum of attraction is really important. You don't want to be with a guy that you find repulsive from the outset, okay? But somewhat attractive is okay. And then that can build. You want to have that base. So I talk about the three chakra connections. So you want this, this, and this, right? This is the base. If you do not have this, it's not going to happen. You're going to be dating your brother. You don't need that. You already have brothers, right? So this, this, this. You want to have the three chakra level connection. If you have just this, you have a boy toy. If you have just this, you have a best friend brother. If you have just this, you have an intellectual sparring partner. If you have all three, you've got all cylinders moving. Okay. Yes, one more question. And then we have to relinquish the space and we can go to Chloe across the street. Yes.
I totally know in terms of what I want when we're talking about the Victor.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? But
Victor.
Just a little more spine than heart, not a lot, a little
more. Okay.
And so going back to your just in terms of modern day 21st century, a woman approaching a man first.
Ooh, yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Versus the man making the first move specifically.
Yes. Love it, love it, love it. Okay, so first of all, as a man, I can tell you there is nothing more attractive than a woman who has the incredibly great taste to be into be. Okay, so, you know, I'm like, wow, that's amazing. So some guys say, oh, that's a turnoff. I'm like, hell no, that's not a turnoff, right? So if you are clear and forward with your attraction, the right guy will like that. The guy who feels small, who's intimidated, guess what? You just sort him out. You don't want to be with that guy anyway. Okay, so that said, you don't want to be the cheetah pursuing the gazelle the entire time. So this is where I advocate the, you know, one step forward, two steps back thing. You say, hey, when are we going out? You don't say, hey, I've got a reservation at Spago for 7 o'clock and it's on me. Okay, that's cool. If that happens a few more times, then you're going to have a very different kind of relationship. I mean, sugar mamas are a great idea, but maybe that's not what you're looking for, right? So what you want to do is you want to make the signal very clear. I am interested in you. And then step back and allow him to fill the space with his masculine presence, right? Because in the end, you want to know the guy is capable of leading. You don't want to, like, train him the entire time. All guys need to be trained. And you're training him whether you recognize it or not. So get good at it from the outset. So you're always training men. If the guy texts you and you're not texting him back, you're training him to be a flake. Because he's like, okay, I guess it's okay not to text people back, right? Train him well. Train him the way you want him to be with you, the way you want to be with him. So I would encourage ladies to be more proactive in their approaches with men. And you can do it in a subtle way. Hey, when were you going to ask me out, right? So you're throwing it out there, right? So you're using the yang. Yang is the masculine power. It's the instrumentality. You're throwing it out there. And then at the same time, you're withdrawing back into the yin, allowing him to do something, okay?